Okay, welcome back to the Greg Kelly podcast. Do you know who Dave Portnoy is? I do. He's that Barstool Sports guy. He's been around for, 10, 15 years now. He's very good at what he does. I, quite frankly, am not a big fan. I'm not a critic or I'm not opposed to him. I don't find myself gravitating toward his content. The pizza reviews work for some people. I don't think they're particularly insightful or whatever. But total respect for what he's created. A media empire, millions of fans all over the world. He's doing something right. Now, one thing I did see him do, a very good interview with Donald Trump during the campaign at the White House, the Colonnade. It was really interesting and mentioned that LEG stuff, and it was good stuff. So, why do I bring him up? The Business Insider did a major piece, a hit piece. I think it was basically revenge porn. A ridiculous piece that tried to say that he is some sort of, it's not quite rape, but it's pretty damn close to sexual assault, whatever it is. Two instances, two women. But here's the problem. The allegations, the story, so many holes. You could drive an aircraft carrier through these holes. Here's an example. The very start of the story, he meets some girl via Instagram, and the girl texts him or DMs him, "Those are some sick pizza reviews." And he writes back to her, this is according to the insider, Business Insider, which did the story, "What's up, fly bitch?" And they start communicating. Now, that's all the insider tells you, the Business Insider. They, wow, what kind of guy says hello, bitch? I mean, isn't that an awful thing to say? What they leave out is she has fly bitch on her T-shirt. She's wearing a shirt that says that. Now, leaving that out is a sin of omission, right? How can you not put that in there? They deliberately left out information in an effort to portray him as a jerk, as some sort of a menace. Nobody would just say that to a person, or no reasonable good person would say that. However, when it's on the T-shirt, it's very much in the spirit of the moment, don't you think? I think so. So that's basically the whole tenor of the story. He's an idiot, but they're leaving out key details, and I think it's a big problem. I would say, I don't know David Portnoy, I've never met him, might want to think about settling down and taking it easy, because hookup culture is, it's not good for anybody involved. And I know that because I was part of it for a long time. So my best wishes to him. I'm sorry he's going through this fake news debacle. However, something tells me he knows what he's doing. All right. So today we're talking to people from my life. And a few months back, I ran into a guy who is a security guard in an office building. You pass these guys potentially every single day. And do you know what makes them tick? Probably not. And struck up a friendship, with this guy, Eddie. And he's a security guard at a major office building in New York. What is that like? Well, you're in for some surprises. I'm very glad I had this conversation with Eddie. I think you'll enjoy it. But first, before we get there, I want you to know that when I wake up in the morning, I love to drink coffee. And I also like to do something patriotic for this amazing country of ours. Ever since the American Revolution, drinking coffee has been declared an act of patriotism. Especially during these times, we can't forget what makes us uniquely American. Hard work, self-determination, and individual liberty. Freedom does not brew itself, and that's why I like to drink D'Espresso Liber. Founded by a Green Beret almost a decade ago who developed a dedication to crafting outstanding brews after multiple deployments. D'Espresso Liber coffee is 100% Arabica coffee sourced from the finest coffee farms from around the world and is roasted fresh in-house once they receive your order. The D'Espresso Liber experience starts from the moment You open the package. The aroma is almost as good as the flavor. Not kidding here. I could smell the coffee through the packaging even before I opened the bag. And although I'm no coffee connoisseur, I can tell you D'Espresso Libre is out of this world. It's very tasty. It's full-bodied. It's smooth. It gives me a delicious jumpstart to my day. Rich in flavor and American values, D'Espresso Libre coffee encourages all of us to sit down together and unite with fellow patriots to celebrate our God-given rights. So, if you want to wake up every morning to a savory, micro-roasted cup of coffee that supports quality coffee farmers, America's special operations community, and our great country, visit D'Espresso Libre. That's D-E-Espresso, E-S-P-R-E-S-S-O, Libre, L-I-B-E-R.com, D'EspressoLibre.com. It's a veteran-owned, family-run small business whose brew tastes as good as it will make you feel. After all, freedom does not brew itself. And now my conversation with my pal, Eddie Edmonds. He's a guy you might pass and not notice the security guard at a building, but he's got quite a story, and it's quite a life. Eddie and myself, we spoke just a little while ago. When people ask you what you do for a living, what do you say?
Well, now I work as a doorman, Midtown Manhattan, do security, greet people when they come into the door. And, you know, that's the best part of my job. And that's actually how you and I met when I was standing at the front door.
Well, let me ask
said
you,
hello.
Are you a doorman or do you are you security?
Would
you
security. Say? Security.
And yes, I know you're right there. And we I guess you watched Newsmax. How did you what happened?
Yeah, watched. Of course, we've been watching you over the years, you know, faithfully when you were on with Rosanna Scotto and Fox, and you know, transitioned and you transitioned over to Newsmax. Been watching you faithfully because a lot of my beliefs are right in line with yours. You know, Irish Catholic from New York City, politically aligned. And saw you walking down the street one day, and I said hello, and I just anticipated that you were going to say hello and keep on going, and no, you stopped for 15 minutes and chatted like we were old friends, and
15
that really
minutes.
Showed
what the
you
hell?
What kind
of person. I must have been lollygagging. I don't know what the hell was
going
on that
well,
day.
You were. You know, when you come out of the subway, you're taking your time in the morning. You've got your Dunkin' Donuts in your hand, and you're always carrying a dozen donuts a couple of times a week for your folks in your office there, so I know you take good care of them.
Thank you, pal, for noticing. I get so look, man. So you work security. It's an office building, right?
Correct. And I started working there 2 years ago. I'm retired from FedEx. I was a FedEx courier for 34 years. Predominantly, most of my years were down in Florida, and came back up here for family reasons. Retired from FedEx and wound up with this job in Midtown Manhattan, which I love.
I didn't realize that you were with FedEx. That's a long time. And courier, you were actually delivering packages.
That's right. I was courier. Did 34 years of Christmas deliveries. And let me tell you, when you do deliveries for FedEx and UPS at Christmas time, you can pretty much do anything that you set your mind to because it's not easy. And I miss it sometimes, you know. It's great. You know, I met a lot of people and, you know, driving around and, you know, just seeing different parts of cities and whatnot. It was great. And but, you know, it was time to the old body. You know, it's not a job that's easy on the body. And it was time to step down. And so I left at 55 and I've been doing this job ever since. And I love it.
Wait, so 55, 34 years, you said. So you started when you were 21.
21. Started at FedEx when I was 21. I stopped going to college. I was going to St. Francis College in Brooklyn Heights in New York there. My dream was to become a journalist. I wanted to be on air. Unfortunately, this was 1980s in New York City. And, you know, drugs were a lot more. They were very prevalent at the time. And, you know, I got into partying and drinking. unfortunately, college, you know, fell by the wayside. And, you know, I partied like everybody else in the 80s, no more, no less, really. And, you know, college fell by the wayside. And there went my dream of journalism and broadcasting. And mom said, well, if you're going to live at home, you are going to have to get a job. So I applied for a job at FedEx. And 2 weeks later, I was delivering packages. And it worked out, you know, good. They took care of me for 34 years. So, but, you know, it was time to move on.
All right. Well, the present. Wow. Very interesting. I want to ask you, though, about the present job for a moment.
Sure.
Getting into a building. I mean, before 9/11, and you probably remember this as a courier, you could just sail right on in, get on any
absolutely.
Elevator you wanted, right?
That's absolutely correct. And it has totally not like that anymore. You would just be able to walk in any building in Manhattan, up to and including the United Nations, untouched, you know, just walk on in. And then 9/11 changed everything, changed the world.
And it changed the job of a security person in an office building.
Absolutely.
So you know, some are more stringent than others.
Absolutely.
Number one, do you like do you guys take a picture of somebody? You can go to some office buildings, get in, they actually make a little ID for you. Is that what happens?
Yes, absolutely. People come in, I'll greet them. Who are they going to see? For instance, they say, oh, okay, I'm going to see Mr. Greg Kelly at Newsmax. Okay. And I'll call upstairs. Hey, Greg, I have so-and-so here for you. And you would say, okay, Eddie. Okay, he can come up, send him on up. And make him take his driver's license, take the person's driver's license, make them a building pass, which is good for that day. And once you have given the verbal okay for them to come up, or pre-authorized visit, you know, you might come down and tell me, hey, Eddie, I've got a visitor. Can you let him up? And I'll say, okay, Greg, we'll do that. And, you know, just make them a building pass and, you know, then get them on their way upstairs to where they're going. A lot of people get peeved. Everybody has the same line. Oh, come on. Do I look like a terrorist? Look at me. I'm old. I'm not obviously not a terrorist. You know, and to be honest, nowadays, nobody knows what a terrorist looks like anymore.
Yeah. Wait, so still you think they resist? Doesn't every, I thought everybody kind of knows the drill that you've got to get, you know, you got to stop, you got to sign in, you got to do all that stuff.
You would think that they do. And I would say 90% of the people are cool with it. But there's just still some people that, you know how there are just some people in New York that think, you know, the world revolves around them. Oh, you guys should know me. I'm here every day. And, you know, there are issues like where people are terminated from their job. You know, there'll be people that can come in every day. They have a building ID where they just scan themselves in every day. And then I'll get a memo one morning and say, oh, so-and-so is not allowed back into the building. They've been terminated. So if you're not on top of your game and knowing that, somebody comes in, you see them every day, and they'll say, oh, Eddie, I forgot my building pass. Can you just let me in today? Well, I will let them in. But however, you have to check the computer system to make sure that they weren't terminated yesterday. And because they could be coming back for revenge against their boss, come in, shoot up an office. And, you know, we're all aware of the news of what happens all around the country. Somebody gets terminated. They're not happy. And just because it's maybe some pretty girl that I see every day come in, I don't know that she was terminated the day before. And they could be coming in to steal computer files. They could be coming in to cause some trouble. So you really have to, there's more to it than just standing there. You know, you have to really be on your game and know who's coming in, who doesn't belong. And but at the same time, you know, treat everybody graciously, which is what I certainly try to do.
Is it... Okay, so you get to meet a lot of people.
Absolutely. And then you have the days. Unfortunately, New York City, nobody lets anybody use a bathroom. So, you know, we have people coming into the lobby all the time. They want to use a bathroom. I tell them, you know, the bathrooms aren't open to the public. And then I become public enemy number one. They're screaming profanity at me and yelling. And, you know, I've been called a racist because if someone happens to come in and they, you know, they're African American and I don't let them use the bathroom, oh, you're a racist. I bet you let white people use the bathroom. No, I don't let anybody use the bathroom. You know, that's not the, unless you're a guest of the building, you know. And then, of course, in New York City, you're dealing with the homeless. You know, sometimes they come wandering in and don't want to leave. And we have the 17th precinct right across the street from us at work. So, you know, we will have to call them from time to time to come on over. And but sometimes the homeless are laying in front of the building and they refuse to move.
So how old is the building where you work?
Building was built in 1963. And that's what the there's a cornerstone brick in front of the building. And
what's the what time do you have to be there?
I start at 7 a.m. and I do the 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. shift every day, Monday to Friday.
And my sense is that you guys notice, like, you notice the little things. You can tell. I mean,
yes.
Like, tell me, give me an idea.
I know you get to see. I know exactly the same people who are going to walk past the building at the same time every single day. I know people's outfits. You know what people wear. You just see the same people every day. I know exactly what time every day you are going to walk past my building. You're like clockwork, same time every day, coming off the subway. And the same way I notice you every day, I notice the same people every day. You know the characters who are hanging around. You just know. You could tell who's not generally supposed to, I shouldn't maybe not supposed to be in the area. But people who sometimes are up to no good, and you know, so you're always keeping an eye out for them.
And you can tell, like, people who actually are working in the building. You can can you tell whether they're having a good day or a bad day, whether they're you know, whether they had a night out the night before. Can you notice little things like that?
Oh yeah, you know everyone's little you know habits. Sometimes the people who go out on stay out a little bit too late on nights. When they shouldn't be, when they're coming to work, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, we're not all necessarily friends outside of the building, but when we're in when we're inside those doors, inside those walls of that building, you know, it's really all teamwork. And, you know, there's things happen where I'm on the phone or, you know, you have to run to use the restroom or you're on break and you really have to learn to, even if you don't like your coworkers, you have to learn how to gel and get along and be a team. Just like athletes, everyone on a team, they don't all get along, but you know, come game day, they're a team. And it's kind of like the same thing like that working in a building. You've got to be a team or, you know, it's not going to work. The structure is just going to crumble. So we have to do that whether you like them or not, you know, and it works for the most part. It really works. And FedEx was the same way, you know, great camaraderie when you had to be, you know.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Manhattan, down on Chelsea, down on 18th Street. I lived in the Robert Fulton Housing Projects, spent a lot of time there. And my grandmother lived in the Chelsea Projects on 25th Street between 9th and 10th Avenue. Spent a lot of time there when I was with my grandparents.
Did you ever see Whoopi Goldberg? Didn't Whoopi grow up there?
Whoopi Goldberg, and around the same age as my mom. And my mom was very good friends with the singer Tony Orlando, whose real name is Mickey Cassavetes. She grew up with him and was very good friends with him. He grew up on 26th Street as well. Whoopi Goldberg was there. And of course, Chelsea still has their you know, hodgepodge of celebrities that you see walking around.
Did you tell me about your parents?
My parents, my mom, Italian, my mom Italian, my father Irish, which back at the time, from what my parents tell me, was taboo. Irish married Irish, Italian married Italian. And my grandparents, each set of grandparents were not happy that, I guess back then that might have been called a mixed marriage. I'm not sure. But their marriage did not last long. They had five children, me being the oldest, by the time they were 27 years old. And my dad was a really bad alcoholic, and he took off when I was the oldest at 12 years old, and never helped my mom out financially. So, you know, that was, you know, hard, you know, having no no father around, no father figure. And Chelsea at the time was not like it is now. Chelsea was, you know, a lot of trouble, you know, the Chelsea Piers and all that. But back then, that was all abandoned. The High Line was not the High Line. So it was really all just about getting into mischief down in, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. You know, we played sports, we played hockey, basketball, you know, just like kids and, you know, in the street. We played our year-round sports, opened up the fire hydrant, you know, during the summer.
Now, sorry, but your dad leaving when you're 12, did he, right. Where did he go and why did he leave?
Well, my mom kept him around because although he was a very bad alcoholic, you know, they had five kids. So, you know, he had a job. But then once he lost his job due to drinking, he worked at the old, you may remember it, East River Savings Bank in Manhattan. And he had that job. And, you know, once he lost it, mom was like, well, you're a drunk. You know, you're already sleeping in the street as it is. You're not bringing any money into the house. So it's time to go. And up he left. And he lived literally in a bar. In the back of the bar, it's now... It used to be called Wilson's. I believe now it's called West Side Tavern. It's on 23rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenue. And my father lived in the back booth. And that was where I knew, you know, where to find him. And it was really hard, you know, not having a father figure. Looking back, I sometimes say, you know, I could have been so much more in life if I had some guidance. But I had, you know, my mom tried, but with five kids, and, you know, I didn't have any guidance. And I was bitter for a very long time, and still am. But about 5 years ago, I hadn't spoken to my father in over 30 years. And about 5 years ago, one day after church, I'm praying in church, and, you know, we always talk about forgiveness and in Catholic Church. And I come out of church on a Sunday, and I was like, you know what? We talk about forgiveness all the time, and maybe I should just call my father and just call him and just say, look, I want to let bygones be bygones, and maybe I can learn how to forgive you. And it's, you know, it's taken some time, and, you know, he doesn't drink anymore. And I've learned to forgive him. My siblings refuse to talk to him, and he lives locally in New Jersey. And it's just, it's hard sometimes because I'm really... When I call him on the phone, I'm really talking, although I look exactly like him and sound like him, I'm really talking to a stranger. So it's still like a little bit of, you know, getting to know you process, you know, because my memories of him are just coming home drunk every single night. You know, he worked downtown, what we now call, but, you know, the financial district. He was down on Chambers Street area. And, you know, he worked, he got out of the bank, and, he would come home drunk every night, you know, just sit in the bar and drink draft beer. And, when I would go to try to get money from him when he was living in the bar on 23rd Street, you know, the guys that he would drink with would give me a hard time. You know, they would always tell me, no, mind you, I'm 12 years old, I'm a little boy. And they would tell me, oh, you know, your mom should forgive your father. He's a great guy. You know, he's constantly buying us drinks. And I would tell that to my mother because being a little boy, I really didn't understand. And she goes, what? He's a great man because he's buying them drinks and he wasn't giving us any money. And she would go sometimes down to the bar. And one time my mom is about, you know, 5'2", little Italian lady. And one time she hit him with a shot across the chin. And this is maybe 45 years ago. And I still remember the look on his face when she hit him, and, you know, it still never gave us any money or supported us. But, you know, getting on in years now, I'm 57 years old. And he explained to me his alcoholism. He goes, and it's kind of, you know, some people will say, oh, it's your fault because you're the one who puts the drink in yourself. And that is true. But, you know, when you become addicted, no different than heroin or opioids, when you get addicted, it's not easy to stop cold turkey. And he explained all that to me. And, you know, I've come to understand it. And I've studied addiction myself on my own and, you know, come to understand it a lot more. And now he's 78 or 79 years old. And I'll call him once a week just to check in and see how he's doing. But, you know, I still have that hole in my heart that, you know, can never be filled from my earlier years. You know, like someone like you were blessed. You know, you had a great father, you know, Ray, and to guide you. And you know, I miss that. But, you know, I can't dwell on it. Like someone told me a long time ago, you can't drive forward if you keep looking in the rearview mirror. Mm. So I try to look forward now.
Now, Wilson's, by the way, that's on the south side of 23rd Street, I think.
That is correct. The diner is on the corner, Chelsea Square. And then if you walk towards 8th Avenue, just a few doors down, Wilson's will be on the south side of the street. I believe it is now the West Side Tavern. It was Wilson's for years.
Now, why? Yeah. I mean, when he lived there, how does that, I mean, what do you, how did that actually work?
He lived, you know, like the guys in the bar had told me, they said, oh, your father's just, he's a great guy. And I guess everyone liked him at the bar and they just let him, he literally lived in the back booth and showered there. You know, that back in the day, those old, all those old buildings in Chelsea, they all have those old basements downstairs and they had, you know, showered down here, down, you know, downstairs for them to use. All these years later, I don't know if it's there or not anymore, but that, or he would shower at a friend's. And then he wound up getting a standing room only apartment directly upstairs from Wilson's, and it was literally just a room. It had a bed and a TV, and you could not, and they had a shared bathroom in the hallway there on 23rd. And you know, the room had just enough room for a bed and a TV, and that was it. Nothing else. And that was, he had five children and a wife, and he threw it all away and was living like that. And now he has 11 grandchildren and five children who he does not know. And that's the damage of, that's what addiction and alcoholism can do. This is a man that spends holidays alone, and he should be spending it, you know, with his 11 grandchildren and five children. And he went from that to living in the back of the bar.
Now, when I hear about, you know, someone grew up the son of an alcoholic, the daughter of an alcoholic, alcoholic mother, alcoholic father, that right. That connotes a lot of things. And what does it mean day in and day out? Like, what, I actually just asked my wife this question, like, what does that actually, what is daily life like? Because, you know, that actually, when you say alcoholic father, that's supposed to fill in a lot of blanks. It doesn't necessarily for me. I mean, as she said, like, well, number one, the temper is always there. But could you tell me, like, what that meant when you said alcoholic father, growing up with an alcoholic father? What is that?
Father, you know, it's first of all, like your wife said, you're always on edge because of the temper. It's like walking on eggshells. And he really would be like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde when he wasn't drinking. He wasn't that bad of a guy. The problem was he was drinking, you know, all the time. And, you know, it's humiliating because all your friends back then, everybody in the neighborhood knew everybody. And, you know, your friends would see your father coming home drunk and then they would make fun of you. You know, we were poor to begin with, living in a housing project. And then, you know, they see your father coming home drunk and they're making fun of you and they're teasing you. And, you know, that builds up a lot of resentment and it builds up, you know, a lot of hatred. And then some of my friends moved away to these big, beautiful houses in the suburbs. And, you know, there we were stuck, you know, with a bare cement floor in a New York City housing project. And, you know, and for myself, my formative years, my younger years, I just thought that that's how every father was. You know, every father was just, that's how, what men did. That was my role model. And then as I got to, you know, back then, you were allowed to go out and play by yourself at a much younger age. By 6 years old, we were allowed to go out and play by ourselves. So I'd start going over friends' houses and I would see how their fathers were. And these were respectable men coming home from work. I'm like, wow, this guy doesn't act like my father. And they would have dinner as a family sitting around the table. And I would try to get myself invited just for, you know, a bit of normalcy, you know, just to say, wow, okay, this is kind of like Leave It to Beaverish, you know. And that was totally different from what I knew. And then I realized, wow, not everybody, not every family is like this. And I, you know, now that I'm older, I know that, you know, every family, of course, does have dysfunction, some worse than others. The alcoholism can, addiction does affect a lot more people than just the alcoholic. As a matter of fact, the alcoholic is the one that has the easy part. They just get to get drunk. And stopping's not easy. That's a whole different story. But when they're drinking, they've got the easy part. You know, they drink and they go to sleep. It's all the other family members that, you know, have to put up with it. And
you're the oldest of five.
I am the oldest of five. I was the only one of my brothers that did not become a police officer. They're all retired now from NYPD. I went the FedEx route and have a baby sister who's works for an accountant. She's worked in for many years. But yes, I am the oldest of five, and I have two children and a grandson. And he plays hockey over in the Chelsea Piers there on 23rd Street. So a lot of times on my weekends, I'll be over there watching him.
So when you're 12, you got that going on. You're visiting your dad. And where'd you go to high school?
I went to Powell Memorial here in the city on 61st Street and Amsterdam Avenue. It's gone now, and that's, most people know the school for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Obviously, at the time, Lou Alcindor, he was there many more years before me. But that's the what the school, most people, it's Powell Memorial is known for him. And we were taught by the Irish Brothers. And I went to Guardian Angel School for grammar school, a Guardian Angel Catholic school on the corner there of 21st Street and 10th Avenue in Chelsea. Still there. Was there for 8 years and was an altar boy there. And most of the kids from the neighborhood either went to Xavier or Powell Memorial. I went the Powell Memorial route.
Now, did your faith, you know, you grew up a Catholic, and I grew up a Catholic.
Correct.
As well. Of it I took for granted. I rejected it. At points I,
right.
Can you describe a little bit, you know, your faith, and you are still obviously a person of faith. You go to church.
Oh, absolutely.
Was that a constant for you, or was it a journey, or tell me about that if you don't mind.
Yeah, it was, the faith has always been a big part of my life. You know, I was an altar boy. I loved serving mass, especially midnight mass. Midnight mass was my favorite. There was just always something about it. I still remember doing it, you know, to this day. And the Catholic faith has gotten me through life. You know, I really feel that without faith, it breaks my heart when someone tells me that they're an atheist. And I'm like, I want to tell them, you know, just believe in something. For me, myself, going and sitting, you don't even necessarily have to go to mass. Some people don't. You just go sit in an empty church and talk to God. And it just brings you in an inner peace. And, you know, I've had it out with people over the years that say, you know, how can you believe in Catholic? You know, how can you be a Catholic with all the, you know, the priest scandals and whatnot? And, you know, you can't just let some bad apples, you know, there's bad apples in everything in life. Politicians, police, just in the general business world, you know, there's going to be bad people. And I never let that take me away from my Catholic faith. And I still, you know, wear it proudly to this day, and nobody will ever take that away from me, ever. I'll still love going down to my old grammar school church there, Guardian Angel on 21st Street, and sometimes I'm over there at St. Columba on 25th Street between 8th and 9th Avenue. And, you know, just go in there for a few minutes. Sometimes I'll go with my mom to Mass on Sundays, or they also have a weekday Mass. I'll go with her sometimes. And you just come out of there, you know, whatever you have going on in your mind, it just, this too shall pass. It just makes you realize that whatever's going on in your life, things will, it might take some time, might not be get better tomorrow, but things in the long run almost always get better. And I swear that, you know, faith has a lot to do with it. I really do.
Wow, that's beautiful. And do you bring it up to people? Do you, you know, as a Christian, do you speak about your faith to others? Do you volunteer?
Yeah. I do not hide my love of my religion, and I do not hide my politics. And I will let, you know, two separate things, obviously, but I've never shied away from letting people know, because I'm someone, for some reason, people like opening up and talking to me, and, you know, they'll tell me about a problem going on in their life. It could be addiction. It could be marital problems. It could be, you know, their wife was cheating on them. It could be what a lot of people go through, financial problems. And I just try to sit down with people, let them know, hey, you're not the only, I promise you, everybody is going through something, some worse than others. Some people it's sickness. Everybody's going through something in their families. They just don't talk about it. So I just kind of like sit people down, talk to them, and just try to bring a little bit of faith into their lives. And maybe, you know, they might say, oh, I don't want to step into a church. That's fine. You do not ever have to step into a church. Close your bedroom door and get on your knees and just talk. And God will answer you in ways that you're not expecting. You know, there are things that happen. You know, you're having financial problems, and, you know, maybe you get a divorce, or, you know, you're having problems with your wife, and, you know, you sit down and you try to, you know, talk it out, or your children are you know, acting like delinquents or having trouble in school. And I've always sworn by the fact that families that pray together stay together. And I know from my youth and even now that I see families that go to church together, their divorce rate is just so much lower. You know, they spend that time. It's just the quality time as a family of just going to church is just so, so important. I really enjoy church in the South. The churches are bigger. They have the big, you know, beautiful choirs. And that's where my faith, as I got older, really just really kept it going in my life. And now to this day, like I said, it's not anything that anybody could ever take away from me.
So after high school, you go to St. Francis College.
I went to St. Francis, yes, for 1 year.
And just for 1 year, what did you major in?
I was broadcasting and communications.
You mentioned the partying. Can you say, like, you know, what were you into? And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of them, certainly back then.
But, back then, the 80s.
Yeah, a lot of, and even today, people get into that stuff. But what were you, well, let me ask you before that. I mean, when you're seeing your father as an alcoholic, do you say, okay, I'm never going to drink? Did that ever occur to you? Did you ever think that I'm not going to do this?
I didn't say I wasn't going to drink. I said I'm never going to be like that. And addiction hits people different ways. Like, some people can have one beer and that's it. They go to bed, you know, that's it. I'm going home for the night. Some people have one beer and they can't stop. And you know, so in my younger years, you know, back in the 80s, for those people, it's really weird now listening to it, but back in the 80s, if you didn't do cocaine, you were almost considered, like, you were on the outside. You were almost like a weirdo. Like, what do you mean you don't do coke? Everybody does coke. And, you know, it all starts with, and you know, people will argue with this till they're blue in the face. Marijuana is a gateway drug. You're going to graduate onto other things. And New York City right now, they don't see it right now with all this being legal. And you walk around Manhattan just like me. You smell the weed. It's in my clothes when I get home. And these people walking around smoking weed, these young kids, they're going to graduate on to other things because, oh, well, weed is cool, so this is cool. And, you know, now the opioids are big and the psychedelic drugs. And but for me, you know, marijuana was gateway, and then, you know, other drugs, you know, cocaine, and then alcohol. And, you know, school went to the wayside. Partying became forefront. And I was young, good-looking guy in New York City. And, you know, you went out, first it starts on Friday and Saturday nights. And then before you know it, you know, the partying was out of control. And, there went my college. And, you know, I was going to college. Ronald Reagan was president. They were practically giving away financial aid back then. And could have gone, you know, I was going to college for free. And I wanted to be, of course, obviously, I did not know you back then, but I wanted to. Geraldo Rivera was a big an idol of mine. He was on Eyewitness News. He came on Eyewitness News when I was in grammar school. And I just loved the work that he did. And I was like, man, I want to be a TV journalist. And so I went into college, and that was going to be my dream. I was going to be Eyewitness News, New York City. That was going to be me. And partying took me away from that.
So what did you
still
did,
to this day?
You regret it, but were you kicked out? Did you fail out? What happened?
No. I just stopped going. I just stopped going, and it broke my mother's heart. It really, really did, because I consider myself, I'm well read. I read a lot of books. I'm knowledgeable. I'm intellect. I like to think of myself as somewhat intellectual, and I could have been much more in life. I feel I regret not being ever able to make a difference. Well, I think I did make a difference. I raised my children, but I always feel like I could have been more, you know.
Do you think, though, that number one, did you become an addict? Did you become an alcoholic? Or was it just the partying that got out of control?
No, I never became addicted to drugs. As you know, as I got older, definitely started drinking more than I should have. Became much more of a habit. You know, you start off drinking, you know, with friends, and like I said, some people know how to turn it off, and you know, some people, unfortunately, it seems like Irish, it just seems to be in our blood. And so now I'm abstinent. I don't drink at all, and I like waking up in the morning clear headed. I was at a wedding last night here in Loudoun County, Virginia, where they just had the elections that we all know of for the governor. And I was at a friend's wedding, and, you know, I was totally fine and, you know, not drinking. And some people overdrank. And, you know, you look at them, you say, man, I'm so glad I don't drink anymore. I'm so glad I don't act like that.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's wonderful, isn't it? It's just such
it's
preferable, and it's just such a better
exactly.
way to live. But, okay, you stopped going to college, and it broke your mother's heart, and she said, get a job.
Yeah.
And
right.
I want to go into that, but did you ever think, okay, wait a second, I can go back to school. Why don't I, you know, did that ever cross your mind?
Well, it did, but not immediately. You know, I should, to be honest with you, she said, you should apply at that FedEx job on 42nd Street and 10th Avenue. At the time, it was called Federal Express. I didn't even know what it was. I went out and filled out an application for a company and did not know what they do, did not know what they were about. I figured, these people are never going to call me. And 2 weeks later, they called me and they hired me full time. And then, you know, a few years go on, I met a girl who would go on to become my wife. And then we had children. And then, you know, going back to school takes the back burner to, you know, earning money. And so there I was, you know, I hate to say stuck at a job, but, you know, it's that company certainly provided for me for all those years, helped me raise, you know, my family, and was certainly a good company to work for. But yeah, you know, at times or through the years, I did think about going back, and I really, you know, miss it now. And, you know, I have spoken to you, you know, about, you know, I would love to, you know, have an internship somewhere, and just to be able to get back, just to be able to maybe work in that industry. You let me, you know, you invited me up to your studio. Very gracious of you. Met your assistants, your producers, and sat there while you did the show. And I was like, man, this is what I wanted. You know, you're somebody that people tune into every single night. That's got to be, you know, a fantastic feeling when you have millions of people that watch you that really care about your opinion. And That's just something that I really envy, and I will take to my grave, you know, as far as never being able to accomplish. But, you know, that being said, I'm sure we all have, you know, regrets in our life, but, you know, we're healthy. I'm healthy, and
Well, let
got a
me
great
ask you
life. Yeah.
before you start working right away, what did they make you? What kind of job? And by the way, the FedEx, I think they still have a facility there at 10th and 42nd still, right?
Yeah, still there, still there.
What did they make you right away? A courier.
I was courier right away. I was in Manhattan at the time. What they had was they were called foot couriers. Now, of course, you see FedEx driving all around Manhattan in their trucks. I was a foot courier. All I did not drive a truck. All I did was I carried bags, sacks around over my shoulder, and I delivered envelopes only. And I worked in the Grand Central Station area, 42nd Street there on the east side, and that's where I was my first location. I applied on 42nd Street and 10th Avenue.
What
Around
year
the,
was this?
this was January of 1986. I had just turned 21 years old.
And by the way, back then, I believe they actually had those little tracking devices, like they were like
Correct.
little radios, and you could
Exactly.
back then you could actually track a package, which was kind of revolutionary, right?
Oh, at the time, yeah. You know, you know, to imagine, you know, you could track a package. You could send a package at 8 o'clock at night from Manhattan and have it in California at 10:30 the next morning. I mean, that was revolutionary at the time and groundbreaking, you know, and this was before fax machines. And then when fax machines came along, people thought, oh, you know, FedEx is going to go out of business now because you could fax a document. But, you know, FedEx grew and now we handle much bigger packages. But yeah, you know, the tracking devices, you know, that was revolutionary at the time.
And
You know, there was court.
you had those on your first day.
Yes, on
Yeah.
Thursday, went to, you know, 2 weeks of training. There's a lot more involved to FedEx than just, you know, delivering packages, especially when you're a driver. You know, before anything else is safety. You
Well,
know, you're
wait.
driving a truck, you know,
No.
you're driving a truck in residential neighborhoods, you safety is number one,
Did they
you know, and that's what's instilled in you.
did they train you for that or initially to
They
drive?
train you, they did, everybody initially is trained for driving, and they, you know, they trained you in Manhattan driving around, which at the time, you know, with the crazy taxi drivers and,
Sure.
you know, everything else,
But let me
you
jump in. Let
learn
me
that
jump in.
you,
Like you
yeah.
you're on foot for how long?
It was 8 hours a day,
No, no, no.
every
For
day.
how long? I'm sorry. How long were you doing that route? How long were
Oh,
you a foot carrier in Manhattan?
I did that for 6 years before I moved to Florida.
And you were a foot carrier the entire time.
In New York City, correct, yes.
And did you the offices that you went to, anything come to mind? Did you meet any just any anything strange? Were you ever held up? Were you ever robbed?
No, I know. No, I had peers that were robbed. It's funny going in FedEx, even when I was in Florida, and you go into some rough neighborhoods. Things have changed now, but FedEx, UPS, the mailman always had carte blanche.
No one's
Nobody
messed with
ever
them,
really
right?
messed with you. Yeah,
Generally
nobody
speaking, it's
messed with
good
them.
news. And by the way, the stuff you're delivering is for somebody else, and you don't know. Yeah, it's not. It's almost, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you?
You know,
Go ahead.
they always just had a respect for you. They respected, you know, what you were doing. You know, you were going to their neighbor's house. Nobody wants to mess with you when you're going to your neighbor's house, you know. And they got to know you know, got to know you after a while.
Let me ask you this. Did you
Sure.
like the idea that you would go to businesses and leave right away, or did it ever cross your mind like, it might be nice to be working in one spot, you know, instead of just kind
Oh.
of coming in and out?
Yeah, you know, over the years, like I started, like I said, when I was 21 and working in Manhattan, and I met, it was a great way to meet women. And then, you know, you go to some companies where you're like, oh man, this would be really nice. And I even over the years, I did, you know, interview at places. But when you work for it's when you're working for FedEx, it's kind of hard to describe. It's such a secure, steady job. It's never going anywhere. The FedEx is always going to be around. People are always going to need it. And, you know, when push would come to shove, I said, this is a really good company to work for. I don't know if I ever really want to leave it because I was good at it and they pay good money. And, you know, I just decided, you know, I guess I better just, you know, stick around with FedEx, you know, because FedEx, you could work 60 hours a week, you know, you could make really good money in Manhattan right now. That's very good money
So
overtime for FedEx, you know.
when you go in, you're in uniform, right?
Correct.
I would imagine that some people might see in Manhattan especially and be like, well, you're the delivery man,
Yeah.
and kind of have a little bit of a condescending attitude.
Yeah, I would get that definitely on the elevators. Like people, there were certain buildings that people did not feel that like you should be on the elevator with them. Like you should be on a separate elevator. Or, you know, what's really bad is that when you would walk into an office and, you know, I'd come into your office, I have five, six, you know, letters to deliver to you. I got six letters for Greg Kelly. And maybe the receptionist is away at the restroom or she's in the break room. And one of your peers, one of the guys, walks by and say, "Hey, I got six letters here for Greg Kelly. Can you sign for him?" "Oh, no, I don't do that. That's wait for the girl to come back." And that would really like set me off. A, because they treated me like that, and B, like because they thought of that as you know, just like somebody that they didn't really have to deal with. And it was really funny is that a lot of these people that did that to me, I was making more money than they were.
Well,
People don't
wait. Can I
realize,
just
you
I
know.
mean, wait,
Sure.
if I I don't want to I like to treat everybody with respect, of course.
Sure.
But if the FedEx man is in the lobby and asked me to sign for packages that weren't for me,
Right.
I mean, that to me is you take on, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I could. Look, I'm with you on everything, obviously, so
right.
far. But that one little thing. I mean, are you sh like? Do you think that was an attitude, or is that kind of like, look, that there's
You know,
legal culpability. There's that's not my job. I'm doing something else
yeah,
right now. There's a lot of other things that might be on their mind.
you know, it could be legal culpabilities, but the what I got from it, I mean, I could tell if somebody would say, "You know what? I don't really feel comfortable signing for it. I don't know Greg Kelly that well."
Yeah.
Hey, that's cool. I got it. But they would give the attitude of, "Oh, I don't do that." And that's a different story. But I would be a ball buster because what I would do is I would say, "All right, the receptionist isn't here. Let me go find Greg Kelly." And I go, "Greg, hey Greg, how you doing? I got six packages for you. Can you sign for them?" "Oh yeah, it was." And you might say, "Oh, wasn't the receptionist up front? She usually signs. You don't have to come all the way back here." And I would say, "Oh well, Bill in the cubicle, two cubicles down, wouldn't sign for you." And I'd be a ball buster because now you'd be pissed at him, and I'd be on my merry way. Like,
Okay.
"Hey Bill, why didn't you sign for my packages?" You know.
Let me ask you this. When you're a foot courier in New York, did you meet anybody famous?
Oh yeah. Oh God. Showing some years here, but East 49th Street is where Katharine Hepburn and the great actress and Keith Hernandez, the New York Met, they lived on 49th Street on my route. They were over there by the United Nations. Grandpa Lewis from the Munsters was another was someone that would get packages all the time. Katharine Hepburn was one where she would sign for our packages, but she would open her door just a little bit, just to stick her hand out to sign for packages. And tons of athletes, Ron Darling from the Mets, Keith Hernandez, and you know, just you'd see a lot of people that would come. You know, you never a lot of times you don't look at the name on the package. You just look address and apartment number. You know, if you're delivering in a residential building, name is really irrelevant. And then some so and so would open the door, and you're like, "Oh shit, that's so and so." And then you look at the package, and you're like, "Oh, you know." So I have some great, like, just from delivering to, like I said, Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling from the Mets. They signed baseballs for me, and had some great memorabilia from them.
Did
And
you said girls, the girls were beautiful. Did you ever have a date or two from
oh yeah, it was great. You know, because FedEx was a good job, it paid very well. I was, you know, 21 years old with a full head of hair, and you know, you got to know some of these girls in offices, and it was great. It's changed a lot now because there's FedEx Express and there's FedEx Ground, and FedEx Ground I feel has really taken away from the brand because they're not actual FedEx employees. They're independent contractors. And they really don't represent the company as well as a FedEx employee does, someone who works for Express. And I think because of that, people now have started to look down on the job a little bit, where an actual FedEx employee for Express, we took pride in our appearance, you know, our hair. And now this is back in the 80s. Men were not allowed to wear earrings. Your hair could not touch your collar. You could have no exposed tattoos. And you had to look like a man. A man was a man. And so the women liked that.
Did you ever meet Fred Smith?
No, I never. From what I hear, that he he goes around the country and visits places. But no, I never was lucky enough to meet him. But that was one man with one college idea that he had, that his professor told him, this is never going to work. And when you think about it, that man changed the way that we live now. I mean, we would order something, you know, from the Sears catalog when we were kids, and, you know, 3 weeks later it would be delivered by UPS. And then this man comes up with an idea that you can have something overnight.
That's wild.
And I feel it really changed the world, because now all of us, we expect instant gratification. Amazon used to come in 2 days. Now we want it in an hour.
Let me ask you this. You went to Florida in 1992. Why did you transfer?
At the time I was married. I had one child. David Dinkins was the mayor of New York City. And he was a good man, a nice man, but he was not equipped for the job. And New York City at that time under him was averaging, you know, 7 murders a day. And in the trains were, I mean, people were getting robbed, getting shot.
You decided for quality of life reasons to go to Florida.
We're out of here. And that was 1992.
Where did you go in Florida?
My wife and I, my son, we went to Orlando, a little town called Altamont Springs, just outside of Orlando. And I never regretted one day of it. Unfortunately, my marriage didn't work out, but I never left until a few years ago, and I never regretted that decision.
How old were you when you got married?
It was 1987. I was like 24 or 25 years old. I was young.
How did you meet her?
I met her on a house party in the housing projects there on 26th Street between 9th and 10th Avenue there in Manhattan. And most of the people there at the party were Spanish. And I was white, and I walked into the party, and I guess kind of got noticed immediately. I was invited by another friend, and we started talking, and we hit it off then, and we had a good time dancing that night, and it blossomed from there. Unfortunately, it didn't last. But
how long did it last?
About 12 years. About 12 years we were married.
All right.
And I'm divorced.
Go ahead. You're divorced what?
Yeah, I got divorced when I was 37 years old. I'm 57 years old. Never remarried. Just concentrated on, raising the kids. And, now they're grown. And, my son works for FedEx in New Jersey. And my daughter works for Apple in, Washington, D.C., very happy, very proud of both of them. Two great kids, and I have a 12-year-old grandson. He's my son's son, and he's a good kid.
Can I ask you real quick, your son, sure. What does he do for FedEx?
He's a courier.
And your daughter for Apple?
She's what they call an Apple genius. You go into the store, and they're the ones that like solve all the problems and the go-to people when the workers there don't know how to do something, fix something. So she says on her resume it says Apple genius. So I guess that's the job title.
And they both went to school, they everything was done in Florida, right? Yeah, you stayed there.
My son moved back up. He graduated from John Jay College in Manhattan, married my daughter-in-law. She graduated from John Jay as well, and they were living in New York there in the co-op on 26th Street, and relocated to New Jersey. And my daughter is just, she was sick for a few years, so she took some time off from school, and now she's going to school in Maryland, has about 10 more credits to go until she graduates, and hopefully we'll be able to move up in Apple.
She's going to the University of Maryland.
Yes, I believe that's Maryland. Yeah, it's University of Maryland, correct.
Now, all right, so you're in Florida and you become a driver, I take it, right? Driver courier.
Correct. Correct.
Driving, and that's 6 years. So you did 28 years in Florida, right?
Correct. Exactly 28 years, yes.
And what, well, first thing, when you're driving all that time every single day, were you ever in an accident?
Yes, luckily, well, I shouldn't say luckily. All of the accidents that I was involved in, were involved in, were deemed by the police to be the other driver's fault.
How many were you
I
in?
was, I would say over those years, not many, maybe five or six, rear-ended. I got rear-ended twice, T-boned
Forgive
a
me for
couple of
laughing. I
times.
mean, like that's like, but that it does make sense. I mean, five or six for me, because I don't drive that much. But that's
Right.
if you're driving every single day, 8 hours a
Every
day,
day.
that kind of makes sense.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, there's people that are in FedEx drivers that are in an accident every year. But five or six, I've never been in an accident in my car, my personal vehicle. But, driving FedEx, I did about 1,000 miles a week.
Wow.
And when you're doing that, and not everybody, now with the advent of cell phones, no, not everybody's cognizant of what they're doing when they're driving. I've had people, nothing ever major where anybody was ever hurt, but you're driving down the street and boom, all of a sudden somebody backs out of their driveway into you. That's an accident. You're sitting at a red light and boom, somebody, rams into the back of you. That's an
So,
accident.
did that job, how much did the job change from 1992 in Florida to the year you retired, which is just a couple of years ago, 3 years ago
So.
or so? Like, it's I'm guessing it was probably pretty much it stayed constant, or did it?
That, well, we started carrying, certainly started carrying much bigger freight, boxes. When I first started, it was letters and smaller boxes, little FedEx boxes. Now, with online ordering, everything started getting bigger and you started carrying a lot bigger stuff. Now you can order a mattress in a box online, and a king size mattress rolled up into a box is not light. That's a heavy thing, and you're out there by yourself. You've got to handle it by yourself, and you've got people following you through neighborhoods. Like I did suburban Orlando in a town called Windermere, and it's where a lot of athletes live. Like I delivered to Shaq and Johnny Damon and Vince Carter and Warren Sapp, a lot of other athletes. Tiger Woods. I was there the morning after Tiger Woods had that incident with his wife, where she attacked the car with
Yeah,
the golf
wow.
club. I was there the next morning after that. That was a story for another day, I guess. But the job has changed as far as what you're carrying because of what people order online, and everybody thinks that their package is, well, to them it is the most
Well,
important
can I
package on
get
the
back to
truck.
the Tiger Woods thing? What can you share that hasn't been shared? What did you
Well,
see?
that morning, he lives in a, they live in a, he lives in a little sleepy town called Windermere, and was neighbors with Shaq and some other well-known folks. And that morning, I would deliver to Tiger and his wife just about every day. And they were, when you meet people at their house, they're pretty cool. It's not like you're bothering for an autograph or pictures or whatnot. And I'd see them, and you never know anything was wrong, and the next morning I'm like, what the hell happened here? They live in a neighborhood with private security, and the Orange County Sheriff's Department was there, and the private security was there. I'm like, what the hell happened? It had been mentioned on the news, but of course nobody else had access to it, the media or no one. And I'm just coming in there with my FedEx truck, and I'm seeing this whole after effect of, what happened. And well, now the rest is history. Who knew that Tiger, with his beautiful wife, was sleeping around with who he was sleeping
Well,
around
that brings me to my next question, and forgive me, and I
with?
you don't have to give too many
Right.
details, but I mean, look, they've made movies about this, so like,
Right.
or and there's this whole idea of the cable man or whatever. But in your travels, did you
Right.
ever get invited inside by, say, a female package recipient and wanted to, you know, wanted you to hang around for a little while.
A lot of them did get very friendly, and you always know when they're going to get it. You always know their intentions. And this goes for a lot of women in life. If you're talking to a woman and somebody who you know, and they start complaining to you about their husband every day, there's issues. And if you're someone who wants to take advantage of that situation, let's just put it like that. If you know, you could really take advantage of it. Put it like that.
Right.
But through my years, yes, I met some very nice women. You know, the job had certainly had its advantages, you know, when I was single.
And all right. So you enjoy the work. The money's good. Were you good at investing or anything like that?
I'm sorry. Say
that again. Were you an investor? Did you invest in the stock market?
Oh, yeah. I have, of course, I was lucky enough when I left FedEx, I have a pension. And, you know, of course, you have your, like a lot of companies, you know, you have your 401k and, you know, was able to get into FedEx young. So, you know, you're able to.
Multimillionaire, basically. the pension will pay you for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah, that is correct. Unfortunately, it's not as good as, say, like a pension like your dad's, an NYPD pension. But, you know, it's a pension, you know, yeah, for the rest of your life. And the reason really why I work now in the building that I do is, you know, retiring from FedEx, you do get a pension, but you do not get medical benefits. So my brother was able to get me a job in that building because he was working there at the time. He's retired NYPD, and he got me into that building. And now I've got great, New York City Union medical benefits. And that's really why I'm doing the job, actually, for the medical benefits. Don't get me wrong. The spending money is nice, too. But the medical benefits are very, very important. That's why I'm doing the job.
While you're raising your kids down there, and you said you're, you know, you have intellectual interests, and are you a reader? What were your hobbies, or what are your hobbies?
Hobbies? You know, big reader, and I read as many newspaper that I can get my hands on. That, and sometimes I'll pick up something that even is too liberal, just to get a kind of an idea of what the other side is thinking. And of course, what the other side is thinking is always wrong, as far as I'm concerned. But I love reading. And now that I think about more. Like history, the history of New York City that we all take for granted. But if you're walking around Manhattan sometimes and you look up at some of the architecture, you're like, wow, man, look at this. You know, and we think that it's only been around since we've been a kid. But, you know, some of this, especially when you go downtown in lower Manhattan, the history down there, you know, along the waterfront. So I enjoy, you know, studying New York City history, definitely enjoy reading. On the weekends, enjoy going to see my grandson play ice hockey. He plays, like I said, down in Chelsea Piers, and he also plays out in New Jersey as well.
You know, like the building you work in, 1963, I think about this all the time. Like, I don't know, that building has been around my entire life. Like, that door
Correct.
Was there no matter what I was doing. In nursery school, this lobby was here just like it is there. Now. And I don't know if that's a fascinating thought or a boring thought, but it occurs to me
No.
1,000 times a day.
It's fascinating. And, you know, I went to kindergarten. I went to pre-kindergarten. I won't name the street or the school, but I went to pre-kindergarten across the street from your apartment building where you live. And my grandmother lived in the building behind where you live. And she would watch me.
Well, you can name it now because we moved.
Oh, you did move.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, bro.
You're out of there. But my grandmother could see me in the school playground. And, you know, and I walk back past that building now, and that building was old when I went to school there. And I think, my God, you know, the history there. And my grandfather, I went to, for 1 year, I went to PS 11 elementary school, kindergarten, before I went to Catholic school. And I went to kindergarten there. And that was the school where my grandfather, the school has a swimming pool. My grandfather learned how to swim in there. And I'm like, man, the building is still there. You know, so I don't think it's boring. I just think it's amazing history in New York that, you know, we all, you know, just take for granted. And I love, you know, some of the pictures that I've sent you, that I've dug up online, you know, the building where you were living there on 9th Avenue, the building is still the same. And that was when the 9th Avenue trains ran elevated right in front of your building.
Yeah,
And to think that your building is still there, you know, all these years later, and I've walked past it every day of my life, just about.
no, it's so cool.
And
And I always wondered,
tremendous
like,
history.
who was in that space, over the years, 100 years
The
ago, who was
years
standing there.
there.
So look, you're a couple two couple more quick things. You
Sure.
are what's the game plan? Like, I don't think you can retire to Florida. You already, I mean,
Yeah.
you came
No,
back
I don't.
here.
I yeah. And Florida right now, is not in the picture. Maybe, you know, maybe someday, because I you know, I have 28 years worth of friends down there, and they were really, 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 you know, good friends. I mean, went to church together. Our kids played athletics together. You know, had dinners together. So maybe someday I'll be back, but not right now. You know, I want to watch my grandson grow up. And, you know, well, you know, and then after that, it doesn't have to be Florida. It could be the Carolinas. It could be something a little bit closer to New York. But for right now, New York is where it's at for
Now,
me.
your dad, so you forgave him, you talked to him once a week. Has he apologized? Has he,
Yeah.
and does what are his regrets?
Yeah, he's, you know, he's apologized, you know, crying. And, you know, men from that generation, you know, don't really cry, you know, and begged for forgiveness. And I said, I forgive you. You know, I understand addiction. I understand alcoholism. I know what it's like to, you know, heroin addicts and alcoholics sleeping in the street don't want to be there. It's all the addiction. And once he explained that to me, he's like, you know, I wanted to stop, but physically I couldn't. I would get sick if I tried. So I've forgiven him. But, you know, and he told me it's so hard for me. It's hard from knowing that, you know, he's wants to apologize to my siblings and he wants to meet his grandchildren, but they unfortunately don't really want anything to do with him. And that really, really breaks my heart because when somebody comes to you really, when someone comes to you contrite and apologizes to you and they're really, really, really sorry, it's really, I mean, for me, it's hard to say no. You know, when they really, really mean it, when they give you a real earnest, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I can't turn my back on that person.
No.
Maybe when maybe my siblings at some time will. I'm not, maybe that's why I never became a policeman like my brothers. I just don't really have, you know, maybe I was just too soft for the job. I don't know.
No, I mean, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you forgave him. I mean, I hope they do someday as well. I mean, we've
Someday,
all
right?
done things that we want forgiveness for, and I think there's some stuff in the Bible about this. We want God to forgive us,
Absolutely.
and I think he wants us to forgive those who have sinned against us. So your dad, when he went, obviously he didn't stay in that bar forever.
No.
Do you know when did he stop drinking, and did he ever get a job again?
Yeah, he stopped drinking. And the reason, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but like I was saying earlier, people think, oh, when people drink or they're on heroin or opiates, they can just stop. You cannot just stop cold turkey. You will go into convulsions. Your blood pressure, you have to, when you stop drinking, you have to be monitored. Your blood pressure will reach a percentage that is not normal for humans. You have to be on medication. So he did stop to try to stop drinking cold turkey, and he went into what have I find out now, he went into convulsions. And you know, was in the hospital, you know, for some time, because you can die from, you know, alcohol withdrawals. And he finally did stop drinking, and you know, did remarry to a woman who, from what I hear, I don't know this to be fact, was this woman. I only met her once, but his wife ha was a big part of him staying away from us children. Like she was part of the deal was like, okay. I think she was kind of jealous of my mom because my mom was still young when my parents broke up. My mom was 27, So she was still, you know, a young, vibrant, beautiful woman. And I think she was always kind of jealous of my mom. And for that reason, my dad stayed, stayed away from us. But he did stop drinking, and he wound up getting a job in New York City, one of the Chase Manhattan Plaza downtown in the financial district, and worked building maintenance for many years, and is, you know, retired now, and lives a sober life. And unfortunately, it couldn't have happened many, many, many years ago. But he's at peace with it. So, you know, the drinking. And I've forgiven him. And like you said, hopefully my siblings will someday, you know.
I know that some people have stopped cold turkey. It's hard.
Yeah.
I did, although I did not go into convulsions. I, quite frankly, right. really wasn't that far along. I don't know if I was an alcoholic. But well, Eddie, thank you so much. I know you're in Loudoun County right now. You went to the wedding. How are you getting back to New York?
I met a very nice young lady at the wedding yesterday, and although we came to the wedding not together, we're driving back to Manhattan together. So looking forward to that drive. We'll be leaving in a bit. I'm here with my friend Al in his bedroom. He's not in the room with me, but he was a New York City chief of sanitation under Giuliani and Bloomberg, and also worked down at when the World Trade Center came down, chief of sanitation. And he's living here in Loudoun now, and was with the governor the other night. I have pictures that I'll show you when I see you. And I have a funny feeling with his New York City experience and his experience here in Loudoun County that he would be somebody that you would really enjoy talking to sometime in the future.
Thank you. Wait, he was with the governor-elect or the present governor?
He was with the governor-elect. I will send you the pictures. With the governor-elect on election night.
Youngkin. How does he know him?
He went to the rally and just approached the stage after the rally, and the governor was gracious to take pictures with him and signed one of the campaign signs for him, and took pictures with him. And he was with the governor-elect, but little did he know. And, you know, they're really happy. It's funny. I was driving around Loudoun County this morning, and on one of the overpasses, this, by the way, Loudoun County is amazing. It is clean. The people are so friendly. It's fresh air. And one of the overpasses was the only graffiti I've seen was "Let's Go Brandon" spray painted on one of the overpasses. And I just thought, I was sorry to see graffiti, but if I had to see it, that just made my day, you know.
Very good, very good. You never know what people are walking around with, you know. Wow, I'm so glad he forgave his dad, and I enjoyed talking to him, and I enjoyed talking to him. I'll probably run into him on the street this week. So thank you so much for listening. Once again, do me a favor, support D'Espresso Libre. This is very, very good coffee. These are great guys, and I think you're going to like it. And who knows, you might get hooked like I am. It's D'Espresso Libre, fantastic coffee, D-E-E-S-P-R-E-S-S-O, D'Espresso, Espresso, Libre, L-I-B-E-R. So it's D'EspressoLibre.com for all the information, and you can order there. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk again soon. Let me know what you think. You can like, subscribe, do all that stuff. All the best. Many thanks.